You are listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.
Welcome to Episode 5 of the GeoNiagara Radio Show. I'm RJ.
And I'm Darren.
Today we will be talking to Travis Gelati and Tyson Morelli from Principal Point Geospatial.
Principal Point Geospatial Solutions is a nonprofit organization based out of Hamilton, and really looking forward to sitting down with them and learning a little bit more about what they do, especially in the field of drones and unmanned aerial vehicles. It's going to be very interesting to hear about sort of behind the scenes of what goes on, learning about flying these machines. But in the meantime, last episode, we discussed that RJ was going to be going up reforesting Northern Ontario, but apparently some plans have changed. And so what are you doing now, RJ?
Now I have taken a job at a greenhouse in Niagara-on-the-Lake, and I am actually doing similar work, but with the luxury of being able to live at home with a bed and a shower, and it's a better situation, I would say.
Still backbreaking work, though, I imagine.
It is still backbreaking work. I'm working 12-hour days and just trying to pick plants all the time.
Still putting that geography degree to work in some capacity.
I can't not. It's just infused in my blood.
So in the last number of days, we've basically been inundated by a deluge of water. And I'm not exactly certain how much rain we've received in the last 3 days, but it doesn't actually seem like it's going to let up anytime soon. And I've seen a number of postings on Facebook and Twitter about the Lake Ontario water levels. So have you seen any images off of Facebook with respect to the water levels?
No, I can't really say I have. I haven't really been on the internet as of much lately. 12-hour workdays have been keeping me busy.
I've seen some postings of Lakeside Park, and the water is like totally up past where the sand would be, like the beach. It's basically submerged. And parts of the original First Welland Canal have decided to take back its former location and start trying to get towards where the first lock of the Welland Canal would be. It's very interesting. I've read in the one of the newspapers that this is the highest lake level for Lake Ontario since 1993. So I think it's going to be very interesting. It's generating a lot of discussion about water levels in the Great Lakes. And it's just a great example of how, you know, what happens in Lake Ontario, how that, pardon the pun, will trickle down into St. Lawrence Seaway, because I've heard that, you know, there are demands to open dams between Lake Ontario and the St. Lawrence Seaway. But if they do that, then it starts to impact downstream of the St. Lawrence Seaway. So obviously cities like Montreal would impact it. So we'll keep an eye on that. And if we manage to find anybody that could possibly come in and do an interview with us for season two, we'll look into it.
So Darren, in your other life as the founder of Geospatial Niagara, you recently attended the Connect conference. How was that?
Well, the Connect conference was actually amazing. It's interesting to see a conference about educational technology, and there's a lot of workshops for the teachers put on by the District School Board of Niagara, but there are a number of school boards that participate across Canada and throughout the United States. So I had a booth there promoting geography and geospatial technologies, and it was great to see a lot of the geography teachers come up to the booth and get some more information about the organization. And they picked up a St. John's Declaration, which is the advancing geographic education in Canada. And so every time we're out doing a show or I'm doing a presentation at a school, I distribute those declarations. And what I'll actually do is I'll post a link on the show notes to a copy of the St. John's Declaration. And anybody listen, feel free to print off your own version of it. But in terms of the conference itself, it was just great to make all these connections with geography teachers in and around Canada. And they seem to think that what we're doing here in Niagara with respect to geographic education, especially with the radio show, very excited about that. So looking forward to keeping these connections and growing them. But it was fun all around. I had a great time. All right. So we'd like to welcome into the studio today Travis Gelati and Tyson Morelli from Principal Point Geospatial, based out of Hamilton. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for coming in the studio. Travis, could you give us, or both of you actually, could you give us a little bit of background on your educational paths? You were a remote sensing specialist. Sort of what got you into that field?
I think I kind of backed in or lucked into remote sensing. I have an undergraduate degree in environmental science and natural resource management, and just had a professor that was kind of overly passionate about remote sensing, and I think that passion sort of spilled over to me. I then went on to get my master's degree and focused on remote sensing and photogrammetry. And I think the reason I did that is because I liked that remote sensing was its own discipline that could be applied to tons of different applications, ecology, agriculture, engineering, landscape architecture. So I liked that I could learn a skill set that could be applied in a bunch of different directions.
Now, for listeners that might not know what remote sensing is, can you give sort of a nutshell description of what it actually entails?
So if I break down remote sensing is collecting information about an object or phenomena without being in direct contact with that object or phenomena. So if we think about the opposite, if we think about what we call in situ sensing, that would be like a thermometer. You need to place a thermometer in a medium such as water to get the temperature. Remote sensing does not come in contact with the object that you're studying. And the traditional way that we do remote sensing, or that I've done remote sensing for the large part, is through camera systems, starting with largely photographic systems that were installed in aircraft, and then going on to imaging systems installed in satellites, right? Same basic principle. You're collecting reflected electromagnetic radiation from objects that you're pointing your camera at.
Tyson Morelli is the partner of Travis Gelati in Principal Point Geospatial, and you have a Bachelor of Arts in German Language and Literature, and I'm really curious of how you became involved with aviation and specifically the UAVs that Principal Point Geospatial uses.
Okay, so my university education really has nothing to do with aviation at all. Back when I started university in Canada, the aviation programs were all college diplomas, and I decided that I would prefer to have a degree and therefore decided to attend university. And the subject I chose was German language and literature. I was lucky enough to go on exchange for a year in Germany as a high school student, and therefore made it a logical choice because I spoke German and enjoyed literature. My aim always was to become a commercial pilot. I was in air cadets and did a private license at a summer camp. And my intention was to become a commercial pilot after completing the degree, which I did for a couple of short years. And then, like most commercial pilots, ran into a downturn, got laid off, and my girlfriend, present wife, decided that it would be a good time for me to get a real job, at which point I applied for and got into air traffic control. Thereafter, years later, I met Travis, and he was talking about using UAVs for remote sensing, and I thought to myself, that seemed pretty interesting, and he said he could use a hand on the aviation side of things. That being my background, I said I would give him a hand.
Going from the commercial aviation to utilizing UAVs, was that a steep learning curve in order to sort of accommodate that skill?
I would say that as far as the rules and regulations go, it's not easy to read through the CARS, the Canadian Aviation Regulations. But while having extensive background in commercial aviation and flying and commercial pilot license, it makes it a little bit easier to decipher the rules. Transport Canada currently is in the process of developing the regulations. So the learning curve, I guess, is also on the regulation side because the government's still making up the rules as they go along. But because I have a background in aviation, I'm able to put the rules into practice.
What happens with time-sensitive flight plans? Like if I'm thinking specifically like agricultural, especially in the Niagara region, if a vineyard manager were to say, I need this flight done tomorrow, there has to be significant lead time in the flight plan filing, does there not?
Yeah, so currently, if you wanted to use a UAV to do remote sensing for either commercial or research purposes, you're required to apply for a special flight operating certificate. The idea behind that is the certificate will give you the authority to use the airspace. 20 days is the minimum lead time Transport Canada asks for the submission of an application for an SFOC. So if you're looking to fly tomorrow, you're out of luck and you'll need to find somebody that has an operating certificate to do the flying for you.
Yeah, but an organization like us has what Transport Canada refers to as a standing SFOC. So we've been through the SFOC process, or the Special Flight Operations Certificate process. We have now got carte blanche from Transport Canada to operate anywhere within the province without applying for a specific operator certificate. So now that we've achieved that level, we could go out and fly tomorrow if a company or an organization contacted us. There's a protocol and procedure that we still have to put in place. We still have to notify some of the airspace users, notify any of the airports in the air. We still need to get a letter or approval access from the landowner. But if you have a standing SFOC, you can fly at essentially a minute's notice.
Excellent. Travis, could you tell us a little bit more about Principal Point Geospatial Solutions and what the impetus was for starting the organization?
Let me start with the impetus for why I started the organization. In moving to the Hamilton area 3 years ago from the U.S., I was finding that most of my opportunities for gainful employment were in the Toronto area. And with a wife and two small kids at home, commuting and spending that much time in a car or in public transit just wasn't in the cards for me. So I sort of flipped the script and decided, well, if I can't find employment in the Hamilton area, perhaps there's a vacuum for services and products in that area. And that has actually turned out to be true. And so starting the company has been a worthwhile venture thus far. We do just about every service and product rendering known to man in geospatial services. We focused a little bit more recently on the UAV side of things. We offer UAV administration. So we just talked a little bit about the SFOC process. We help companies develop their UAV programs, and we've been doing that for an organization in Toronto. And we also provide training, whether it be ground school training to learn the rules and regulations of airspace use and aviation. And we also provide hands-on operation training, whether that be to learn how to command and control your UAV or learn how to use it for mapping type applications. We offer that as well. But we also offer just generic digital mapping stuff as well. Like we're working with some community organizations to do trail mapping project, and we also work as mentors with Geographers Without Borders at McMaster University.
And noticing the backgrounder you provided, that I'd like to get to the Hamilton Burlington Trails Council project. What is that exactly designed to do? What is the motivation behind that project?
The mandate for the Hamilton Burlington Trails Council is to try to get people using trails that wouldn't necessarily use trails. It's not for people that are avid hikers or avid cyclists or avid naturalists. It's trying to get to that population that doesn't use trails. So what we're doing is we're trying to infuse geospatial or location-based technologies into their mandate to help people get more comfortable getting out on the trails, whether it's being able to locate where a trailhead is. You know, some people don't even know that there might be a trailhead, you know, right behind their apartment building or on their way to work. But it's also trying to characterize those trails. And we're trying to use street view type imagery to allow people to see and view a trail before they go out, to see if it's paved or to see how steep it may be, or to even see and experience some of the objects that they may want to follow up on in person.
So it could be almost like a virtual trail tour. Like, are you using the UAVs to capture that imagery as it moves down the trail, or is it sort of something else?
It's something a little bit different. We actually have a camera system that's very similar to what the Street View setup is. It's a camera that has four different cameras sort of all tied together. And we move it via a tripod down the trail system. So if you're familiar with Street View imagery, this is going to be exactly that, but it's going to be on the trail systems. But just like you said, you know, we're also trying to appeal to people that maybe can't get out on a trail, whether they have a developmental disability or maybe they're a little bit older or for whatever reason they can't get out on a trail. This could provide a virtual environment so that people can experience nature from the comfort of their own home.
Sounds like an excellent project to be involved with. You also mentioned that through McMaster University, you were involved with Geographers Without Borders. Could you tell us a little bit more about what that organization is and what it is they do?
Geographers Without Borders got started, I believe, in 2013 on the campus of McMaster. So I actually sit on the national board, which is centered at McMaster University. There are now Geographers Without Borders chapters in Waterloo, Laurier. There's one just starting at Ryerson. There will be one starting at the University of Toronto, Mississauga in the fall, then us, sort of the headquarters at McMaster. Again, the focus there is to give students real-world project experience and benefit the community at the same time. So a lot of the projects that we carry on there have a social or community benefit. And we're really looking to work with organizations that, for whatever reason, may not have the money to carry out these projects on their own or lack the resources to potentially get funding to do some of that stuff. So Principal Point Geospatial is actually a mentor to the students. So we sort of take on the project manager or project facilitator lead. We help them meet with clients. We help them develop proposals, project reports, and actually carry out the work.
So recently I was reading in the newspaper that a drone racing club started up in Pelham. And I'm curious to know sort of the impact that the regulations have on these recreational UAV users.
Absolutely. So within the last month or so, Transport Canada has released, I guess, new rules for recreational users. Up until now, they've been pretty permissive. They've allowed an environment of risk-based assessment to dictate how Transport Canada approached recreational flyers until recently. And like I said, just in the last couple of weeks, they've released new recreational rules that are much more restrictive. And I think it speaks to the fact that some recreational users perhaps were being a little reckless. There's been many recent reports in the news of near misses with UAVs and commercial aircraft airliners. And the last thing anybody wants is something catastrophic to happen to an airliner. So I think, not to speak for them, but Transport Canada has decided that they should prevent recreational users from using the airspace unless they can prove that they know what they're doing. So just recently, they've come out with rules that restrict the UAV recreational populace based on weight class, the airspace, the purpose of the flying, and a bunch of other stuff. I think that something like the race club that you mentioned in Pelham serves a purpose. The recreational flyers that are members and clubs like that certainly get a lot of enjoyment from flying recreationally, and as long as they fly safely in an area that would not cause danger to manned aviation, then certainly they're legitimate airspace users. But part and parcel of that is, from a licensing perspective, I think we can expect to see a remote pilot certificate or permit in the near future, because you will be treated exactly the same as a private pilot or commercial pilot or an airline transport pilot, because you're using the airspace at the same time as manned aviation. So you'll need to have the background knowledge that normal pilots get, because you are yourself, as an airspace user, a pilot, albeit a remote one, but you're still a pilot.
Where do you see the discipline of geography heading into in the 21st century?
It's all going mobile, and it's going to be extremely lightweight and dynamic. There's a million applications right now for UAVs as we try to shoehorn them into replacing or supplementing manned aircraft. Once we get beyond those applications and we start to think about these as robots, there are going to be another 2 million, 3 million applications for UAVs. And that's going to be the really exciting part, because no one has even sort of entered or thought about that space now, right? So if you're looking to get into this area, and if you're in school right now, you're thinking about getting into UAVs, learn software, learn electrical engineering, learn remote sensing, learn photogrammetry. These are all things that are going to factor into UAV use in the future. Location-based technologies are here to stay, and the earlier that we can get kids engaged, the better, from my opinion. Right now, students really don't get visibility to geospatial services, products, or location-based technologies until usually they're at least second or third year in university. If we can start the curve in grade school, just think about how much better students and industry we will have in some of this stuff. You know, I often think back, the camera on my cell phone right now has more megapixels and is more powerful than the first camera I ever integrated into an aircraft, which was only a 6-megapixel camera. I have a 10-megapixel camera on my cell phone right now. So it's ever evolving. It's an industry that is rapidly growing day by day.
I think that's a good message for local school boards or school boards across the globe, is to start integrating aviation principles, I guess that would be, into the curriculum, to think forward into the various applications that UAVs can provide. All right. I want to thank you, Travis and Tyson, for coming into the Geo Niagara Radio Show. And just so everyone knows that we will have extensive show notes on our Facebook page, provide links to Principal Point Geospatial's website, as well as to information about their UAV training school as well. Thank you for joining us, gentlemen. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having us, Darren.
Thanks very much, Darren.
Thinking of pursuing a career in the field of geography or tourism? The Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University offers 3- and 4-year bachelor's degrees and a geography graduate program, each with several study options. At Brock University, you'll get an excellent education with hands-on experience through internships, study abroad programs, co-op, labs, seminars, and more. Explore the world through your studies. Come to Brock and experience the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies today. Check us out at brocku.ca/geotour.
We'd like to thank Travis Gelati and Tyson Morelli from Principal Point Geospatial Solutions for coming on the show and talking with us about remote sensing technologies and UAVs and drone technology and things like that. I was really interested in finding out more about the applications with trails. What do you think, RJ?
I loved that they could incorporate the mapping to the extent where they could map how accessible a trail was. I thought that was one of the most interesting parts. Which brings us into our next topic. This episode, we are featuring Access Now, which is actually an app started by a disabled Ryerson student from Toronto who found that it was too difficult for her to experience a lot of the things that the great city of Toronto had to offer without having to phone ahead all the time every time she wanted to go somewhere. So what she did was she developed this app, which is basically a rating system for accessibility of locations. So if you open up the app, you can see there is green, yellow, and red pinpoints marking the level of accessibility. And each one has reviews on accessibility, such as if there is an accessible washroom, if there is an accessible entrance, if there is wheelchair parking nearby. And you can look up all sorts of factors like these on the app for many, many locations. If you looked up Toronto, they have a sea of all sorts of pinpoints that you can scroll through to find accessible services for those to use.
Now, after reporting the accessibility, if it's sort of deemed as mediocre or inadequate, does that get reported somehow to the City of Toronto or what other municipality that they happen to be in?
I don't think it would necessarily get reported to a municipality, but I would hope that the restaurants or stores, for example, would look themselves up on this app and hopefully use this as feedback to increase the accessibility of their businesses to be as inclusive as they can be.
Excellent.
The name of the app, again, is Access Now.
So now it's time for our event listings for Episode 5. On Saturday, May the 20th, the Niagara Go Geomatics Group has its final meetup of the school year. And that'll be held at Fresco's on 4th Avenue. Jonathan Murphy, who is founder of Go Geomatics Canada, which is a nonprofit organization based out of Ottawa, is going to be coming down and hanging out with some of the students and other geoprofessionals in Niagara. So if you happen to be a geography buff or a remote sensing buff or a student or a professional, you're more than welcome to attend. And it runs from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. On Monday, May 29th, is Bike to Work Day, which is the kickoff to Bike to Work Month, which runs from May 29th to June the 30th. June the 5th, on Monday, is World Environment Day. And on Thursday, June 8th, it's World Ocean Day. You can never have too much ocean. And again, we'd like to hear from you. If you have any show ideas or interview ideas, send us an email or a tweet or contact us on Facebook. It's the Geo Niagara Radio Show on Facebook. On Twitter, it's at Geo Niagara. And you can send us an email at geospatialniagara@gmail.com. So we know people are listening, so please contact us. We'd love to hear from you. And if you like what you hear, we encourage you to visit the CFBU website, www.cfbu.ca. And if you like what you hear, click on the support button and help us continue to provide community-based programming on CFBU 103.7 FM, St. Catharines.
Our next episode will be the last of the season, and it will air at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, June 21st. And it will feature Dr. Marilyn Jolyneau from the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University. We'd like to thank you all for listening, as always.
See you in June.
You have been listening to the Geo Niagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.